Good morning, everyone. My name is Matthew Runzelman. This is joint work with Mike Swift, also at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. So we all know that there are many challenges in writing device drivers. As just one example, this slide shows a subset of all the kernel memory deallocation functions. And of course, there are many, many more. In order to write bug-free drivers, developers need to remember precisely when to use each of these memory deallocation functions to ensure problem-free operation. Furthermore, sometimes it's not even necessary to call a deallocator. The kernel manages memory for some structures automatically. So knowing when to free and when not to free memory is clearly a complex proposition. In contrast to kernel development, consider Java in user mode, which has a much simpler memory management model. Java usually deals with memory deallocation using the code shown here. Rather than using a variety of different deallocation protocols as in the kernel, Java uses garbage collection and finalizers to free unreferenced data structures automatically. Now, I'm not claiming that most driver programming bugs are a consequence of incorrectly freeing memory. Rather, this example is merely indicative of the kinds of things that have been improved in modern programming languages like Java. Indeed, programming in user mode and in Java offers a number of benefits to kernel driver programmers. We've just looked at the example of memory management and the advantages of Java. A second example is type safety. Java sacrifices some flexibility compared to C, but ensures that several classes of bugs simply cannot occur. As a third example, consider debugging, which often requires two separate machines. In contrast, numerous interactive debuggers are available in Java for Java in user mode, and it's possible to debug applications using only one machine. The important point is that modern languages like Java offer numerous benefits to driver programmers, and that some of these benefits, like better debugging support, apply to user-level programming in general. So our hypothesis is that the difficulty inherent in kernel driver programming leads to driver bugs and unreliability. There are a variety of existing approaches to this problem. Isolating drivers, as in Nooks and SafeDrive, fix the symptoms of unreliability, but don't address the root cause, namely, kernel driver programming is complicated. Writing device drivers in user mode offers some advantages, like simplified programming and debugging, but these drivers often suffer from relatively low performance. Using a completely new driver architecture and starting over also has its appeal, but rewriting all the drivers in a system as complicated as Linux or Windows would be an expensive undertaking. In addition, developers are often reluctant to throw large amounts of code. To address this problem, we've developed a decaf driver system. Decaf drivers execute only a small amount of performance-critical code in the kernel using C, like interrupt handlers. In contrast, all the remaining driver code runs in user mode in Java. Last year at ASPLOS, we presented the microdriver system, which splits drivers in this way. The decaf system is based on this work, but adds a migration path to Java, which provides the benefits discussed earlier. As an example of these benefits, we'll later see how using Java exceptions can shorten the length of a file in the E1000 network driver by 8%. Decaf drivers also provide high performance, and our results from testing 5 decaf drivers show a maximum performance penalty of about 1%. Finally, decaf supports driver and kernel evolution. We applied a collection of patches to one decaf driver and found that doing so was straightforward. So, having discussed the motivation for the decaf system, I'll next present an overview of the goals and architecture of decaf. After that, I'll discuss the design and implementation of the decaf architecture with a focus on the communication mechanisms necessary to support decaf drivers. Finally, I'll present our evaluation. So, to be successful, decaf must be practical. It needs to be easy to use, impose a negligible performance impact compared to native drivers, and provide workable solutions to the difficulty of driver programming. First, to be practical, decaf needs to provide compatibility. Decaf must require few kernel changes to ensure decaf drivers can coexist with traditional drivers in the same system, and to make it easier to adapt the decaf architecture to other kernel implementations. Second, decaf must provide a migration path from existing drivers. This migration path eliminates the need to rewrite thousands of drivers from scratch and allows driver code to include both C and Java so that developers can migrate a driver gradually rather than all at once. Third, decaf must support driver, device, and kernel changes. Open source projects often have hundreds of developers and frequent software releases, making software evolution an important design consideration in any new driver architecture. So we're all familiar with the kernel driver architecture used in operating systems like Linux and Windows. This architecture provides minimal error checking, either compile or runtime, because of its reliance on the C language. Furthermore, this architecture provides relatively limited data structure libraries and few debugging aids, as we discussed earlier. So to address this problem, to address these shortcomings, decaf splits drivers into two components, a driver nucleus written in C and a decaf driver written in Java. The driver nucleus contains performance-critical code like interrupt handlers and network packet send and receive routines. The decaf leaves this code in the kernel to ensure maximum performance. In contrast, the decaf driver contains everything else, including initialization, shutdown, power management, and device monitoring code. Decaf also provides runtime support, which facilitates communication between the user-level driver, the driver nucleus, the kernel, and the device. This framework uses XPC, or extension procedure call, to communicate complex kernel data structures between the different driver components. XPC was introduced in Nooks and is like RPC, but for extensions within a single system. The decaf architecture also incorporates a driver library. Like the decaf driver, the driver library contains driver code, except it's written in C and operates in its own domain, separate from Java. This library is used primarily as a staging ground while migrating code from C into Java. It contains those driver functions which are not performance critical, but have not yet been migrated. Finally, the decaf driver can invoke the driver library either directly or by using XPC. We'll see how this works in more detail later. So given this overview of what a decaf driver looks like, I'll now discuss how to create decaf drivers. Creating decaf drivers from scratch is possible and supported, but many drivers are written by using existing drivers as a starting point. As such, the decaf system and my presentation focuses on driver migration. To facilitate this process, decaf provides a tool called Driver Slicer. Next, we'll look at Driver Slicer in more detail. Starting with an existing driver, the first step is to annotate it. These annotations are similar to those used in RPC. They fully describe the driver and kernel data types in a way that C does not, and are necessary to copy data between different domains. For example, a character pointer could represent a null terminated string, a variable length array, or even a single character. Once annotated, the developer executes Driver Slicer using the annotated driver as input. Driver Slicer then splits the driver into a driver nucleus, which contains performance-critical code like interrupt handlers and packet send-receive routines, and a driver library, which contains everything else, including code used for initialization, shutdown, and power management. Finally, the developer can rewrite the driver library into a Java decaf driver. Decaf supports migrating one function at a time from C into Java, which facilitates debugging and simplifies testing. Now, having discussed the motivation and provided an overview of the decaf system, I'll turn to some details of the design and implementation. In broad terms, I'll focus on the issues that arise when communicating between these different languages and how these issues relate to creating decaf drivers. The decaf system includes three major runtime components, all related to communication: locking and synchronization, data sharing, and communication support. Combo locks are a locking primitive introduced in microdrivers and facilitate synchronization between user and kernel mode. The object tracker, which is an updated version of the microdrivers implementation, manages copies of kernels and driver data structures in the different domains. Although these topics are both important to the operation of decaf drivers, I will instead focus on XPC. XPC, or extension procedure call, provides cross-domain communication, either between user and kernel mode or between Java and C. We'll next examine this communication mechanism in more detail by considering an example. In this example, suppose we have already rewritten the ENS1371 sound card driver using the decaf architecture. In the common case, namely when the user plays a sound, the interrupt handler executes. Since this performance critical code is implemented in the driver nucleus, it executes at full speed and no XPC is necessary. Now, suppose the user wishes to load a driver, a relatively rare activity. After executing the insmod command, the kernel calls the sound audio PCI probe function exported by the kernel. Because this function is implemented in Java, instead of executing this function's implementation, the kernel actually invokes a stub. The stub then invokes XPC. Kernel user XPC is used to transfer control and complex data structures between the user-level driver and the driver nucleus. Conducting these data structure transfers requires overcoming several challenges. In particular, data structures are routinely shared between the driver and the kernel, but many fields are used only in the kernel. Naively copying these data structures between user and kernel mode would be a disaster because of the heavily linked nature of kernel data structures, and because many of the fields simply are not necessary for correct driver operation. Instead, decaf copies only those fields which are necessary. Furthermore, decaf also supports recursive data structures like circular linked lists to avoid unnecessary copying. In all cases, decaf uses static analysis to find the variables used and generates marshalling code that copies these variables on an as-needed basis. So going back to our example, using XPC, the probe function stub transfers data and control to user mode. However, this data is available only in the driver library, not the decaf driver. Kernel user XPC operates only with the C language. To simplify the design, decaf splits XPC into two components, one between user and kernel mode using the C language, and another between C and Java in user mode. In our example, the sound audio PCI probe function is implemented in Java, so we need a mechanism for transferring control and data from C into Java. To address the problem, decaf uses Genie. Genie is a language which allows C and Java code to be mixed in a single source file at the level of individual expressions. The Genie language uses the backtick operator to switch between languages and is an excellent way to simplify communication between C and Java because of the complexity of the Java native interface. This example is a Java wrapper for the C outb function. Outb is used for writing a single byte to a device. Here, Java code is shown in red, and the C code is shown in blue. It's necessary to invoke native C code for this operation because outb is a platform-dependent operation and consequently has no Java implementation. This code demonstrates that accessing the device directly is easy with Genie. Using the backtick operator, this Java wrapper can easily pass the values val and port to the C outb implementation. However, sometimes it's also necessary to communicate more than simple scalar values between domains. Recall our continuing example. After transferring control to the user mode C domain, decaf needs to invoke the Java sound audio PCI probe driver function. Since this function is implemented in Java, decaf needs to provide a C wrapper which transfers the necessary data structures into Java. This transfer involves marshalling the C data structures into a language-neutral buffer, copying the buffer into the Java domain, and then demarshalling the buffer. To conduct this transfer, XPC is necessary. Decaf provides native Java access to kernel and driver data structures, so XPC is used to provide the necessary marshalling and demarshalling functionality. So, using the extension procedure call with Genie, decaf can invoke functions implemented in the decaf driver. Decaf also supports a variety of similar control transfers using XPC. For example, XPC is used when calling a kernel and driver nucleus functions from the decaf driver. Likewise, invoking the driver library also uses XPC. This same mechanism is used for all cross-domain communication. Next, we'll look at the other major implementation component of decaf, namely driver slicer. The driver slicer tool provides the means for converting existing drivers into decaf drivers. Driver slicer, which is based on our previous microdrivers implementation, splits drivers into a driver nucleus and library. Once split, driver slicer also provides a framework for migrating code into Java. Rewriting C driver code into Java is not automated, but this is possible with commercial products like Novosoft C2J and Jazillion. For the remainder of this section, I'll focus on accessing kernel data structures in Java. Driver slicer provides Java equivalents of these structures and most of the necessary communication code automatically. And we'll look at how driver slicer does this next. Providing access to kernel data structures in Java requires solving two key problems. First is the need to convert kernel data structures into a language-neutral representation, and the second is to copy these data structures between domains. Driver slicer addresses these problems in two phases. In the first phase, driver slicer converts the C type definitions in the original driver source code to the external data representation, or XDR. We chose XDR because our goal was to leverage existing cross-language RPC functionality for calls within a single process. In the second phase, driver slicer executes enhanced versions of the RPC gen and JRPC gen tools using the generated XDR as input. These tools convert the XDR specification into Java classes and create the marshalling code necessary to transfer kernel data structures between C and Java. We enhance these tools with support for the heavily linked and recursive data structures found in Java. Next, we'll look at an example tying a C data structure definition with its Java equivalent. This example is from the E1000 network driver, which includes a structure called the E1000 adapter. During its first phase, driver slicer extracts the E1000 adapter definition shown here. This example includes a pointer to a fixed length array used for storing a copy of the PCI configuration space. Unfortunately, XDR itself does not support such arrays. To resolve this problem, driver slicer outputs a modified version of this structure. Instead of defining a pointer in XDR, driver slicer creates a new type, which is simply a structure that contains an array of the size necessary. Driver slicer then outputs a pointer to one of these structures. The important point in this example is that the in-memory layout is the same in each case, so it's not necessary to change existing kernel data structures. After creating the XDR specification, driver slicer invokes phase 2, which involves running enhanced versions of RPCGen and JRPCGen. Driver slicer invokes JRPCGen with the XDR as input to create a Java implementation of this class automatically, at which point the class is usable in the DCAF driver. Now, it's worth noting that the driver developer does not use the functions shown at the end of this class directly. Instead, these functions are only used during XPC invocations. They are responsible for marshaling and demarshaling structure contents. Finally, we'll discuss DCAF support for driver evolution, which is fundamentally a communication problem. As an example, we applied 320 patches to the E1000 network driver between the 2.6.18.1 and 2.6.27 kernels. In the process, the E1000 adapter structure required new members. Unfortunately, the communication code that integrates the DCAF driver, driver library, and nucleus will not copy these new pieces of data automatically, making these fields unavailable in the DCAF driver. As a solution, driver slicer treats the original driver as an interface specification. Developers can simply add new members to the original e1000.h header file, rerun driver slicer, and use the variables. In this way, driver slicer can repeatedly generate new marshaling code to support data structure changes. In addition to normal kernel driver development, this solution addresses updates to the kernel, kernel data structures, and even the device itself. So, in summary, DCAF meets our goals. The DCAF architecture allows traditional drivers to continue to run on the same system and provides the driver slicer tool, which facilitates converting existing drivers to the DCAF architecture. DCAF also provides a migration path into Java by allowing developers to rewrite driver functions one at a time from C into Java. Finally, DCAF supports driver, kernel, and device evolution by treating the original driver as an interface specification and regenerating the marshaling code as needed. So, finally, we'll look at our evaluation of DCAF drivers. This evaluation examines several drivers that we have migrated to the DCAF architecture, looks at the performance impact of DCAF, and considers the benefits of programming with this framework. So we converted 5 drivers to the DCAF architecture, and some were, in fact, rather large. The colors here denote the type of driver. Orange is network drivers, green is the sound driver, blue is mouse, and yellow is a USB 1.0 host controller driver. Annotations required affect anywhere from 0.5 to 4% of the original driver code. It's important to emphasize that these annotations represent a small effort because so few lines of code are affected, and you only have to annotate the kernel itself once. The next two columns show how many functions ended up in each domain. The driver nucleus includes code like the interrupt handlers and packet send and receive functionality. In contrast, the DCAF driver includes everything else: initialization, shutdown, error handling, and device monitoring code. Note that the UHCI-HCD driver requires a large amount of code to run in the kernel. This result stems from a driver design that mixes both performance-sensitive and insensitive code within individual functions. Consequently, because driver slicer splits drivers at the granularity of functions, all this code has to run in the kernel. Finally, we did not convert all the code into Java. Some code we could not test because of hardware limitations. We believe the option to leave some code in C is a benefit for driver developers who don't have access to all the hardware necessary to test a driver in its entirety. For example, the mouse driver supports several different kinds of mice, but since we had only one available, we elected only to convert that code into Java, which we saw being executed. So this slide will show the relative performance of DCAF drivers to native drivers. To test the performance of the 8139 and E1000 network drivers, we used the NetPerf TCP stream benchmark in both send and receive mode. We tested the ENS1371 sound driver by playing an MP3 and observing that playback was uninterrupted. We untarred a large archive onto a USB 1.0 memory stick to test the UHCI HCD driver. And we simply used the mouse to ensure that the mouse driver worked acceptably. That said, here are the results. The important point here is that the performance is effectively unchanged relative to the native driver. Relative performance isn't the whole story, though, because these are all I/O-bound workloads. As such, CPU utilization may vary. This chart compares CPU utilization before and after conversion to the decaf architecture. The y-axis indicates CPU utilization during the workloads described previously, and the x-axis lists the drivers. The error bars denote the 99% confidence intervals. It's worth noting that only the E1000 and ENS1371 drivers invoke XPC and transfer control to user mode during workload execution. The other three drivers do not need to use user mode code during the performance benchmark, so we expect their performance to be similar. As you can see, the E1000 CPU utilization is slightly worse, and we expect this is because of a watchdog timer that executes in the background in user mode every 2 seconds. The important point here is that it's possible to move a large amount of code into Java and still get excellent performance. So, now that decaf's performance characteristics are clear, I'll examine the experience of actually writing them. We found that the initial conversion of driver code into Java was straightforward because it can be mechanized. Since the syntax of C and Java is similar, we simply use find-replace operations to convert the code into Java. We converted leaf functions first, namely those which did not call other driver functions. Because of decaf's architecture, we could test these as we went. Afterwards, we converted the rest, including the initialization routines. Once the driver was rewritten in Java, we then started modifying the code to use Java language features. The paper discusses this topic in greater detail, but for now we'll look at how using exceptions in the E1000 decaf driver simplifies error handling. Error handling in drivers is important because of the large number of reasons an error may occur. So this example shows code from the original E1000HW.C file. You can see that it tests the return value from each function call and returns early if it detects an error condition. This idiom results in many extra conditionals mixed with driver code because there's no language level support for recovering from an error condition, and it's easy to miss one. After converting this code to use exceptions, the result was shorter and easier to read. Furthermore, because of Java's checked exceptions functionality, it's much more difficult to miss an error condition. Indeed, we discovered at least 28 cases of ignored error conditions using compile time error exception checking. And after converting all the functions in the driver in the file to use exceptions, we found that the resulting code was 8% shorter. So, in conclusion, decaf drivers simplify driver programming. They provide a convenient one function at a time migration path from C into Java, and they allow large amounts of driver code to run in user mode where there's more tool support. Decaf supports continued driver and kernel evolution, as well as excellent performance. With decaf, it's no longer necessary to sacrifice programmability for high performance. Our hope is that user-level drivers and Java will make drivers both easier to program and more reliable. So thank you for your attention, and I'll now address any of your questions.
Hi, that seems to be interesting work and worthwhile work. One issue I haven't seen is the memory performance of what you're doing. Java seems to impose a large overhead in memory.
Overhead.
Have you studied that?
We have, and indeed there is some memory overhead because Java there's two components. There's the driver nucleus and the decaf driver, and between these two components there is indeed a factor of several times. I would estimate maybe a factor of 3x memory overhead as a consequence.
Thanks.
Simon Schubert, EPFL. In your evaluation, you showed or said that basically most of the time there was no Java code invoked while running the benchmark. So that tells me that during operation, your approach doesn't help me at all if there are bugs in the driver.
On the contrary, you're right that the driver code wasn't executed during the benchmark. The decaf, the Java code, wasn't executed during the benchmark. But large amounts of Java code were executed during lots of other common tasks, such as initialization, which is largely a user mode operation. Another example would be, for E1000, all the ETH tool functions. Those are all implemented in Java. basically the only code that remains in C is that which is required for maximum performance, data path kinds of things, networks and receive and interrupts.
Hi. So besides moving to Java exceptions, did you refactor the C code to use any other Java features like the standard library, linked list functions, and so forth?
Yes, indeed we did. The paper describes two other things that we did. We looked at, first of all, Java's object-oriented functionality. In the E1000 HW file, we found that we could rewrite all the functionality in that file as a class, and as a consequence, cut out approximately 6.5 kilobytes of driver code. Because just simply by using the implicit this pointer in Java instead of passing a structure pointer to every function. We also looked at, we have some preliminary work on the using Java's garbage collection functionality, but that's pretty preliminary and I don't want to stake anything on that. Let's see, yeah.
Okay, answer your question.
Yeah. And we also use the data structure library module in loading. When you load a module, it checks the runtime parameters or parameters specified on the command line for options. So we found that using a hash table could simplify checking those parameters.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
I might not get the technical. I'm a little tired right now. Actually, I was going to tease you. Is your next iteration going to be called Red Bull rather than TCAF? Anyways, speaking of the optimization, have you taken any of the threads in Java and for thread optimization, actually back and optimized within or change the JVM itself and or optimize the JVM and or the threads to, there used to be a thing in Java servers where you could actually optimize the performance via binding that JVM to a particular processor or part of a processor for performance. I'm kind of talking multiple performance improvement issues.
Actually, yeah. In terms of performance optimizations, we've done effectively none. we're using the standard Java, Sun Java runtime environment to run the decaf driver. And indeed, the user mode driver component, the decaf driver, and the driver library all execute as a single thread. It's all no performance optimizations.
Anton Burtsov, University of Utah. So we probably should ask a question. Is it really easier to develop drivers in this framework? Because we presumably have to move to some simplified language construct, but instead you added several components to the kernel and like split the driver in two parts. Is it possible at all to debug a new driver? Can you comment on that? Thank you.
Well, user mode, yeah, okay. Well, so with respect to debugging, debugging is much, much easier in user mode than it is in the kernel. We observed that repeatedly throughout development. For example, for the driver library, we could execute tools like valgrind to find all kinds of bugs in the C driver component. And then as we would convert the C code into Java, then we could simply begin using the Java debugging functionality. And as mentioned, we use Genie to simplify C Java communication, and Genie itself also includes a debugger now, which we've used to, for debugging in user mode.
So you believe you simplify the path of deploying
absolutely,
the new driver?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Having code in driver code in user mode makes it much easier to write that code.
So have you had a chance to look at the density of bugs that occur in something like the E1000 driver?
Yeah, like where are they distributed?
Right, between what stays in the what that to stay in the kernel and what that to move up into, or what you would move up in Java, effectively.
Yes, indeed. we performed that experiment in the earlier microdrivers work, and we found that on a number of drivers, and we found that the bug distribution was more or less uniformly distributed between code that ultimately executes in the kernel and code that executes in user mode.
I guess what I'm trying to say also is, just last week, I stumbled upon a bug in the E1000 driver in an old kernel that I happened to be stuck with. And sure enough, it only shows up when you have the 2+ gig process banging one gigabit per second. And sure enough, it was right in the RX path.
Okay. Well, so that specific bug.
Right. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I'm wondering if you don't have, and that's just, and a question, whether you might have more bugs that are harder to fix down in, guess what, code that can't sleep, code that can't do anything, versus code that sure enough is running on behalf of a process, can sleep, can do anything it wants.
So we didn't conduct that detailed of a study, but we did just look at all the driver bugs that were reported between several revisions of the kernel, and we found that the number that ended up in user mode was more or less proportional to the percentage of code that was executing in user mode.
Thank you.
Yeah. Earlier you mentioned that you rewrote some C code into Java. Did you happen to retest your performance tests, and what was the performance degradation?
Just as a consequence of moving the C code into Java?
Yeah.
The performance loss there isn't so substantial, largely because most of that overhead is in control and data transfer between user and kernel mode.
Okay, thank you.